Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'll be your moderate Democrat from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, I'm Greg Matuszak. I'm your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi there, I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia, and I'll be your conservative libertarian for the evening.
Hi, I'm Emily Brewer, and I'll be your moderate Republican.
And all that could change during the course of the next 45 minutes. So, please do us these favors. Please find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where we not only have the podcast, but we have blogs and commentary written by those of us who know how to type. Please find us and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Rate and review us on iTunes, and that really helps us because it gives us feedback on how we're doing. And also, the more ratings we get and the more reviews we get, the higher we go on the iTunes list and the more listeners we get. And finally, please share our link on your Facebook newsfeed and tell your friends to give us a listen. We'd really appreciate it. Guys, this was a big political week, even though we're beyond the primaries and it should be downtime. But boy, there's nothing about this week that felt like downtime. What do you think?
I was going to say, there's nobody that I would want to be this week besides Hillary Clinton. I mean, because she's just got daggers coming at her. It's bad. She even had to say sigh out loud on a teleprompter. It's getting pretty tough out there.
I missed that one. She did? She said sigh?
She read the word sigh.
She said, this is week has been what I refer to on our page as Clinton Palooza. This has been the week of Clinton, and not in a good way though. I mean,
well, there's been some good,
but in some ways though, it's kind of balancing out.
She made some new friends at the FBI, but let's talk about the Benghazi report.
Oh, not just one Benghazi report, though. There were actually two Benghazi reports, and we'll get to that in a moment, though. We'll start with the quote unquote official Republican led Benghazi report, which was not the first one. This is the eighth one, right?
Something
correct.
Like that.
Something. Correct.
I knew actually it was the eighth one. This is the eighth one, and the wealth of new information is. Well, it's nothing, actually. There was no information. It was mind-boggling in the fact that there was no new information, and it just came to us with a giant... That was it. Ta-da! Nothing. All that build-up and all that, oh, this is going to be the one that gets her again. Nothing.
You know what, though? I want to jump in on this because, you know, obviously, not because I'm a Republican, but I do have a different view on Benghazi. So I think we got a couple of things here. Obviously, it's a total witch hunt, I think, at this point, by Trey Gowdy. Straight up, he slipped off the gate and said, and it's an election year. And he said it as he started this huge commission that was going to be the takedown of Hillary Clinton. Was that screwed up? Absolutely. Every piece of work they do since he said those words is in vain. Having said that, there was a lack of swift action that led to the death of people. And the best thing that Hillary Clinton could do, if she thinks she's going to be able to recover the military vote, is look in a camera, apologize, say, I did not act swiftly.
Oh, that
this
is
will not happen
I'm
again.
I'm sorry, Emily. I'm taking you on here. Where are you getting your information? First of all, it was documented in the Republican report that no response would ever have been effective. They couldn't have gotten anyone there if they left at the first 2 minutes of that of the first attack. That's number one.
Swift action of decisiveness.
Oh, please. And secondly, she was the Secretary of State. There's a Secretary of Defense. There's a CIA. There's a Pentagon. They're the people responsible for responding to a military attack. Not the head diplomat of the United States.
So then why do you think that the buck is stopping with her, and why do you think they're doing a commission?
It's stopping with her because you're putting it in front of her. It wasn't her job.
I'm pretty certain she's the one sitting at the center of this investigation. So why is that then?
You said it yourself at the very beginning. This whole thing was pretty partisan, and it was a political takedown. That's why there was an investigation from the very get go.
Did they ever interview Leon Panetta? Did they ever interview Petraeus? No. And if they did, they certainly didn't do it on primetime television.
Can you not admit, though, that someone needs to answer for it? Then if it's not her, who is it?
You tell me who it is. I just told you who it is. It's the Secretary of Defense. Who's responsible for responding militarily to any kind of an uprising at one of our embassies? It is the military. The State Department does not control military assets. DJ, am I wrong?
Frankly.
No, you've got to say sigh.
Sigh.
Sigh. That's what the
I am frankly more disappointed in the fact that we can get so much more animated about what happened in Libya in 2012 than we can about what's happening in Libya in 2016.
Okay.
Daesh and Al-Qaeda are on the march. The only Western power that has seemed, and I'll say seemed because I don't know everything, neither one of you, but the only Western power that seems to have any interest in combating them are the French, who have forces all over Northern and Western Africa fighting these bastards, beating these bastards in numerous areas, while we sit and, it appears, twiddle our thumbs and argue about what did or didn't happen in 2012.
I would respectfully take issue with that, too. I just read an article today. I'll pull it up. ISIS has lost about half the ground it controlled. Our military has been more successful in the last 6 months than any time since ISIS has begun its attacks on Iraq. I could go through. This is a new...
You just proved my point, Kevin. I talk about ISIS growing in Libya and in northern Western Africa, and you throw out what we're doing to them in Syria and Iraq. That's not the only theater. And we keep pretending that it's the only theater as they continue to grow in Africa, and we leave the French to do the job that we should be doing. Now, I am glad the French are doing their job, and I'm sure that they would help us if we actually put more effort into it out there. But we are not putting the effort we should be. Instead, we are arguing about what happened in Libya in the past and not focusing on what's happening in Libya in the present and what could happen to Libya in the future. That is a failure of the Democratic Party, who in power has done almost nothing to face what's happened in Libya since Gaddafi fell. It is a failure of the Republican Party, who has not used their majority in Congress to do anything about pressuring the administration to fight those people in Libya. And frankly, my party, my new libertarians, hasn't had the opportunity to fail on this yet, but they would have if they tried. So I'm not going to necessarily say the libertarians are – well, the libertarians are blameless, but just by accident. My point is Washington and, frankly, the country as a whole is spending too much time arguing about 2012 and far less time than it should focusing on what's happening in 2016 right now. We still need to beat them right now in North Africa, and we're not doing it.
And I'm agreeing with my libertarian friend over here now, since he's no longer Republican. But on a serious note, we have, you know, Iraq, Syria. Oh, yeah, great, wonderful. But we have countries like Morocco, Mali, Yemen, Indonesia, Malaysia, all of these countries that are having small-scale growth that is progressing in those countries. We have a bigger problem, and I will agree with DJ that 2016 is a bigger deal than 2012.
Okay, fine.
Okay, all right. Let's round this back, though, to the Benghazi report. Now that we've had 8 reports, congressional
Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to keep drinking.
I think you should, because this is a 9, actually.
9 with the Democratic response. That's right.
Right, which pretty much. Do you feel that Secretary Clinton has been – what's the word – cleared of anything, or do you think she's been somewhat vindicated of these charges that have been hurled unjustly against her, Emily?
You know, I think that there's just so much more to be said than just, is she cleared? Obviously, if I feel like they were going to indict her, it would have already came. So I think that's a moot point.
Benghazi report.
Now that there's been 9 reports.
The question is,
you guys, I need to stop drinking already.
Do we think If the question is, do we think that there will be criminal charges filed against Mrs. Clinton for Benghazi? The answer is no.
That's not the question. Do you think that there have been 9 reports? Does this in your mind vindicate her in any way?
We're talking about the Benghazi attack.
I don't think this vindicates her, but I think they're beating a dead horse. Right.
She was still part of an administration that has handled Libya incompetently, but that's about all you can say. And Benghazi itself did not. The Benghazi incident may have confirmed that to some and not confirmed that to others. But in terms of the larger problem with this administration's policy in Libya, this is largely tangential to that now.
Well, it's tangential. You're right. It really is tangential because the past is the past. And you're saying, what are the solutions for the future? I couldn't agree with you more. You're 100% right. But unfortunately, the GOP is embroiled in a presidential campaign with a Democrat who they believe they can take down with this, you know, whole Benghazi thing. And so it's not going away. And to answer Greg's question, you have to say, you know, has she been cleared of what? Because they try to pin like 5 different things on her. Clearly, she didn't do anything to instigate the attack, and she didn't do anything wrong in responding to the attack. So the question then becomes, you know, did she lie to the families, or was there some duplicity about what caused this attack in terms of, were they trying to protect Obama's reelection by shifting blame to the film when maybe it was more towards a terrorist attack? And the thing is, that is such a broad kind of area that you can never say she's vindicated or she's nailed or something. I see Republican senators that are coming on television still saying, you know, she said this to Chelsea that night, or she said this to the Egyptian prime minister or president the next day, therefore she lied. You know, that's never going to go away because she said a lot of things, and they probably all were true in some form or fashion at some point in time. I happen to believe that the film was a part of the attack, that the film did play into the planning of the attack, and they used it as a smokescreen. You can say that I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. You can say I'm carrying the water for Hillary Clinton. You can accuse me of anything. I happen to believe that was the truth.
Well, that's fair.
At most, I think the video became a convenient excuse to do this under the cover of the attack of the protest in front of the Egyptian embassy and confuse people. And it succeeded in that regard. But again, this is one of those.
I'm sorry. Are you saying a convenient excuse for the terrorists or a convenient excuse for the administration?
Yeah, convenient excuse for the terrorists.
Oh, I agree with you.
To go ahead and do this attack.
Yes,
I think and as for the Republican reaction, a lot of this is frankly trauma from 2012 when Romney soft pedaled this at the end of the campaign. So many Republicans are still convinced that Romney should have beaten Obama. They don't understand why it didn't happen, and this is. Some of them still have not gotten through the acceptance, and they're still in the bargaining phase. And they're thinking, well, if we had been harder on the president on Benghazi, maybe we would have won in 2012. And they can't be harder on the president because he's walking away. So they're going to be harder on the first political target they can find, and that's Mrs. Clinton.
Right.
And that's a large part of what this is. And there's also some institutional holdover from the fact that the Democrats managed to bring down Nixon. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that, but I'm saying that Republicans have always, even when I was a Republican, I was born in 1972, I knew nothing about Watergate, but Republicans have always, I think, institutionally and culturally have had the feeling of, wouldn't it be nice to knock down a Democratic president or a Democratic candidate for president on some sort of corruption and essentially get revenge for what happened to Nixon? That's probably something dealing with this, even subconsciously.
Don't you think that was Clinton, Bill Clinton?
The impeachment. A lot of that, they talked about that back then, yeah.
I don't think a lot of the guys who were involved in the whole thing, they were cheating on their wives and they were sleeping with interns and they were doing the exact same thing at the exact same moment.
Well, you're talking about Bob Livingston, who was the Speaker of the House for about a minute and a half, after Newt Gingrich, who resigned because he was having an affair with his now wife, who was then just a dalliance of his, while his second wife was dying of cancer, I believe. And so all that was going on while Bill Clinton was, you know, being accused of having had an affair in the White House, which he did.
Well, in the meantime, while all of this was going on this week, the Attorney General decided it was a good time to visit former President Bill Clinton for a chat, which set off a new round of wailing and gnashing of teeth.
I think it was Bill who visited
the Attorney General. I think it was Bill who visited the Attorney General.
Whoever visited whom, it was enough to set all the shit spinning, if I may say so, regarding the fact that the FBI is still ostensibly trying to figure out the situation with Mrs. Clinton's private email server. Now, I have always said that this is more about the intelligence community essentially getting some bruises in on the State Department as part of bureaucratic internal warfare that has nothing to do with Mrs. Clinton, but it does seem to still have some political consequences until the FBI flat out says, no, we are not indicting. So the question I would put to the Democrats in the panel is this. Given that the FBI, which in theory the FBI reports to Mrs. Lynch, that they are still investigating this, how does it look optically that Mrs. Clinton's husband paid a visit to the Attorney General?
Greg?
You know, it's funny because we were watching Meet the Press, and my 10-year-old daughter was in the room, and she was watching it. And they were explaining everything. They, you know, Meet the Press is actually geared, what I believe is, towards 7-year-olds. So so she was understanding everything. And so I didn't have to explain anything. My 10-year-old is quite bright. And so afterwards she goes, so let me get this straight. They just had a conversation? There's nothing wrong with that. They just talked about their grandkids. They talked about golf, and they talked about people.
Okay,
Hillary Clinton said that, and she totally just took it at, and she didn't understand any of the deeper context. And she brought it up again at dinner because I said I'm going to do the podcast. And I'm going to talk about that meeting. She goes, some people get so riled up about these things. She goes, people just like to talk about their grandkids. Let's just talk about these things. It's no big deal. And that's what it is. So I agree with my daughter. Some people just like to take these things out of context. They just talked about, you know, kids.
You're
like
right.
That.
You're right.
Wait,
do
Greg,
take
are you being sarcastic or are you being serious?
I am being sarcastic. Okay. I would love to.
Because I'm going to let Emily talk, but I just want to go on record as saying, I agree with your daughter. Okay, Emily, it's your turn.
So.
Look at the world through my daughter's eyes and just say yes. But sometimes I'm a little, that was a bad idea.
Okay,
go ahead,
Em.
You are exactly right. No matter what they talked about, okay, it could have gone one or two ways. It could have been, hey, grandkids, this, that, golf. Or it could have been, great conversation. When we walk out of here, we're going to say we talked about golf and grandkids. I think it was probably a benign conversation, but that doesn't matter because they put themselves in a situation for the American press to run with this, let the people run with this. Why would they do that? First of all, Bill should have walked away from that when he saw her the other direction and just left because he knew it was going to turn into a headline.
Well,
so it doesn't matter what the conversation.
He walked onto her plane. It wasn't him deciding to, you know, the better part of valor was to leave. He actually went to find her. So
then don't you think that he probably should have had a light bulb that go off and say, you know, this probably wouldn't look good for my wife. Let me just turn around and go the other way. Anybody?
You know, I'll speak to this because I'm going to be, you know, you guys are going to think again, everybody thinks Kevin says this because he's protective of Hillary. He's got a Love Jones for Hillary. I swear to you, a Love Jones.
I'll
tell you what that is later.
I know I know what Love Jones is. But
I've been accused of, and in more graphic terms, I've been accused of that.
Okay.
I will tell you from the moment I heard about this and ever since then, in everything I've read, everything I've heard about on television, I personally still don't know what the uproar is. I'm being absolutely sincere here. You guys don't know this about me, but for 5 years, I worked for a company that created ethics and compliance programs for other Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies. We became, in our writing, somewhat experts on what conflicts of interest are. And a conflict of interest is impropriety or the appearance of impropriety. And my question to you is, what was the impropriety of him talking to her? First of all, the assumption is that, let's say that he went on the plane and he said, by the way, what's happening with Hillary's email investigation? Do you assume that from that, Loretta Lynch is going to somehow be swayed to change her opinion or swayed to change her action on it? Do you believe that he offered her a bribe?
This has nothing to do with her. This has nothing to do with her. It's about what he did, not what she may do.
No. But I'm sorry that I'm picking on you tonight, Emily. It's not because I don't love you. But I disagree with you. For there to be a conflict of interest, there has to be an appearance of impropriety on the part of both parties. And I don't see what her impropriety is. Because unless you assume that he went on there with, you know, $1,000 in his hand, and he said, Loretta, go buy yourself a nice pair of shoes.
You're taking this so much further than what I'm even saying, though.
Okay.
Here's the difference. If they're at the White House press dinner, and they're having a really nice time, and they pass by and have a glass of wine and have a conversation, say hello, how are the grandkids? That's one thing, okay? But the difference is that somebody went out of their way to make a point to have a conversation that's going to look bad in the press.
But look,
I'm not saying
why?
That anyone got bribed.
I'm just saying that it looks.
Kevin, let me answer your question with a question.
Okay.
If in 1988, Nancy Reagan had noticed that Lawrence Walsh was at a dinner table somewhere and personally went across the room to seek him out, shake his hand, and have some sort of conversation, do you not recognize it would have hit every major newspaper in America in 1988, and Nancy Reagan would not have looked good by doing it?
Well, to your question, I will acknowledge that you're probably right that every major newspaper would have made a point of it. But again, I will say I personally don't see the harm, because I believe that these people – and again, I'm just speaking my mind. I'm not saying I'm right or anything, but I believe that Lawrence Walsh and Loretta Lynch, that these people have some integrity, and that she's not going to be swayed by Bill Clinton coming up and saying, "How are your grandkids?" Because I just got a new baby granddaughter or whatever he had. I guess it was a grandson. I just don't believe that the Attorney General of the United States is going to be swayed by that.
No one is saying that someone's going to get swayed. It's just an optics situation, period.
So what we're saying is, and Emily, I think you agree, is it looks bad, but it's not bad, right?
I'm not saying that anything was done wrong. I'm saying it's a poor choice. There's the difference.
Okay.
I'm not saying
right.
that there's a conflict
okay.
of interest. I'm telling you it's a poor choice.
Right.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let me ask everybody this, okay? Who does Loretta Lynch report to? President Obama, right? Okay, he endorsed Hillary Clinton. Is that a conflict of interest?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so why isn't that a conflict of interest? He could tell her what to do, and he just endorsed Hillary Clinton.
I will say this, is I don't think it's a direct conflict of interest because it's for a party platform, but I will say this.
No, it's for the candidate. He endorsed the candidate.
I think he should have waited until probably the convention to come out then. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I agree.
I haven't heard anyone except for the furthest right wing people say that this was any kind of a conflict of interest.
The president's endorsement is a sign that to an overwhelming majority of Democrats, one, even an indicted, convicted, and jailed Hillary Clinton would be preferable to them than Donald Trump. And two, they refuse to acknowledge the existence of any alternatives between those two. So why don't we switch from Clinton to Trump, who actually did say something that looked bad and was bad.
Okay.
In his speech this week. that well, I'll get to the Democratic platform later and everything else. I want to beat up Trump, so I'm doing it. He gave arguably the most protectionist speech that any Republican presidential candidate has ever authored since Herbert Hoover signed the Smoot-Hawley tariff into law in 1930. He essentially took all of what we know from micro and macroeconomics about the benefits of freer trade and assumed that he is smarter than all of us. He actually talked about imposing tariffs on steel, which George W. Bush actually did 13 years ago to appease West Virginia and had to reverse within a year because everybody who used steel, car makers, office building builders, home construction, etc., screamed bloody murder. I have always said that Donald Trump is yesterday's man, and he proved it. He wants to take us all the way back to the 19th century, where him and his crazed neo-mercantilists seem to think that the fewer foreign products are on our shelves, the better we are. And that Trump has been so loud about it is all the more reason why people who are who generally want smaller government, limited government, and government to be reduced in size, scope, and cost, like I'm sure you do, Emily, need to run away from Trump as you would screaming from a dumpster fire. He does not belong in the White House. He does not belong as the nominee. He does not belong anywhere near a place where policy should be set because his economics are straight out of 1842.
Let me discuss real quick. How does Gary Johnson, Big Johnson, how does Big Johnson feel about the I'm going to keep saying that. How does he feel about the TPP?
Truth be told, I don't have his exact opinion on the TPP. I know he's more favorable to it than certainly than Trump.
Everyone's more favorable than Trump is.
He may be more favorable to it than Clinton. There is within the Libertarian Party a sort of an enemy, a perfect is the enemy of the good strain that seems to think that any freer trade agreement that is not 100% free trade is an abomination. I don't think Johnson is part of that clique. So I think he appreciates the value of the TPP. But more importantly, the idea that this bizarre notion that NAFTA was somehow so horribly damaging to the American economy. NAFTA is a free trade zone. One could argue that far more tariffs on our goods in Mexico were lowered than tariffs that we imposed on Mexican goods coming here. Our last real serious economic growth spurt in the 1990s came after NAFTA was enacted and enforced. It boggles the mind that so many people, and it's not just Trump, unfortunately, it's a whole bunch of Republicans and a whole bunch of Democrats, seem to be so focused on this or that industry that is impacted by free trade and not notice that consumers are infinitely better off and that folks who rely on imported inputs like steel are infinitely better off from freer trade. And it sends us down a more dangerous and darker path, and it's not a path that I like.
And you're right, DJ, and they don't know the facts. As you said, the economy took off in part after NAFTA was enacted. And I've seen Democrats say, oh no, you know, the only reason that the economy took off in the 90s was because of the tech boom, and NAFTA kicked in right at the end of Clinton's term, and that's why everything went south during the Bush years, which is not factually correct. Emily, you actually are going to be at the Republican National Convention. You are going as an alternate delegate, is that correct?
Correct. So I get to show up for the party and not have the blood in my hands.
Well, that remains to be seen. But what are you hearing in terms of the push for unbound delegates or for delegates to be unbound on the first ballot, the Never Trump movement, as it's called? What are you hearing?
So in Virginia, actually, this past week, there is an actual delegate that filed a lawsuit that said it violated his constitutional rights to be stuck with voting for Trump, and he wanted to assure that he was actually unbound and that no one could bind him to vote for Trump. And I have a sense, I've been getting probably two emails a week from this group that I can't figure out who they belong to or they're from, but called Delegates Unbound, and it's a nationwide movement to obviously unbind delegates. The problem is that each state has their own rules on how this is done. Some states have people bound to the third ballot. Virginia is free after the first. So some of this ruckus will mean nothing if they can't get something through the Rules Committee to be able to allow it or disallow it.
And what do you think? Is there a shot that the Rules Committee might advance something to the floor that suggests that delegates be unbound on the first ballot? Because if not, he's going to be the nominee.
They've
got to be unbound from the beginning, right?
I absolutely do not think that will happen, and here's why. Just in Virginia alone, we have people that were in the Cruz camp that have already transitioned to the Trump camp, and they are saying, no, 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 this will not stand, this will not stand. We will not allow this. And I think that many people are just rolling over and they're going to accept it.
Right. Now,
going back for a second, someone is suing because they feel it's not their constitutional right.
That's what he quoted himself as saying.
But he doesn't have to be a delegate. I mean, and it's a right. It's a semi private party. I mean, that's ridiculous. I'm trying to wrap my mind around
and there are already people from the Trump movement, from what I have heard, who are trying to get the guy removed as a delegate anyway, so he wouldn't have to worry about the sort of crisis on his conscience.
Which leads me to my next question, Emily. Right. You're an alternate. What would make you a delegate? Does somebody have to be sick and leave the delegation?
If someone doesn't show up, or if somebody doesn't make it to the floor when they have a vote.
Okay, so let's say that happens. You're a Virginia alternate delegate. For whatever reason, one or more people cannot serve to be delegates. Are you unbound, or are you bound by what their binding would be?
If it's on the second, the first ballot, I would be bound the same.
I see.
Because it's Virginia law, not Virginia law. It's part of our plan. The second ballot, it would not matter.
Interesting.
Here's the thing. Looking beyond this rule, that rule, the other rule, and everything else, the Republicans have two very serious problems. One.
Only two?
Well, okay. They have two serious problems of note in this particular
Donald
issue.
Trump.
They have a whole bunch of others. First of all, if the delegates manage to unbind themselves and find some way in a rule they can deny Trump the nomination and give it to somebody else, if they give it to any one of the candidates who Trump defeated, that person has no real mandate from the party. Trump, whoever it was, Trump beat them or convinced them to get out of the running. So none of them would really have a mandate. So your next option is to go to somebody who never even bothered to run. And it becomes an open question whether that person really has a mandate, whether that person can show the voters, yes, I said for months and years that I didn't want to be president and that I was going to let the party pick somebody else, but now I think I want to do this myself. Those of us who are following British politics right now, and I know that's not most of your listeners, are watching Michael Gove's Hamlet routine where he said he wasn't going to run and now that he is going to run, and nobody trusts him farther than he can throw him. So the simple fact of the matter is even going with somebody who didn't run will lead to questions of legitimacy and questions of whether they have a legitimate mandate. The simple fact of the matter is the only salvation the Republican Party has, if they do not want to nominate Trump, is to nominate no one. You can't You cannot say that you broke your vow to vote for Trump on the first ballot if there were no ballots. You can say, look, the only thing we were bound to do was vote for Trump on the first ballot. We chose not to have any ballots and to nominate nobody instead. We did not break the binds that we had. It is a recognition that no one really has a mandate other than Trump to run as the Republican nominee. So the best thing to do if you don't want Trump as the nominee is to nominate nobody. Now, I'll freely admit, I have an interest in this, in that my guy, Gary Johnson, would thus have a clear shot at Hillary Clinton. Forgive the pun.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that's really the – if the Republican Party is serious – about trying to stop Hillary Clinton, then the recognition is they have to sit back and realize that they as a party cannot do it because of what they have done to themselves, and they need to sit this election out.
Yeah, that kind of self-sacrificing thing, I don't know if that really works for – I don't think the Democrats would do that. And I don't think – and I know – I don't think the Republicans would do that. Additionally, as I was trying to – I didn't mean to interrupt, but I did. No candidate also has the money base at this point either. Ben Carson isn't raising – what did Clinton raise last month? $67 million? I mean, at this point – it's go time. If you don't have cash on hand, you are so far behind, and you've only got 5 months, 4 months. It's a tough one. And I hate to have everything boiled down to dollars and cents, but it's boiling down to dollars and cents.
Trump has fixed that argument by raising basically no money over the last month or so.
Oh, but he's a billionaire. I mean, he's got $10 billion. I mean, he's
at
any moment now, and let us see them,
What it really comes down to is for people that are elected officials, what is my best play to protect my reelection? And for people in the Republican Party who are not elected officials, what is our best play to limit the damage that can happen in a Clinton presidency? Okay, they're going to stick with Trump because he might just win, and then he'll appoint some decent Supreme Court justices. And even if he doesn't win, probably trying to ride his limited coattails is a better play than having nobody at the top of the ticket. So basically, the party is trying to figure out how do we limit our damage, and they have the right now their limited damage is ride the Trump train as far as it'll take us.
I actually disagree. I think if they nominated somebody else, then yes, all hell would break loose and be a total mess. But it's going to be a total mess anyway. But if they actually nominated nobody, then guys like Mark Kirk could, you know, I'm guessing Mark Kirk probably would go with Clinton over Johnson. And some of those folks could actually do that without getting the traitor label thrown at them. Guys like Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, for example, could probably go for Gary Johnson, say he's better than Hillary Clinton, in my opinion. It's a lot easier to do. And the fact of the matter is, if it were to become a Clinton-Johnson race, then Johnson has the experience in office that Trump doesn't have. Johnson doesn't have the negatives that Trump has. I actually think if the Republicans just sat this out, let their candidates pick between Clinton and Johnson, I think the party would actually do a lot better down ballot than if they are stuck with the Trump millstone. I genuinely believe that.
Okay.
Oh, I agree too. Let me ask you a question, and this was along the lines you were talking about. Do you think it would be wise at this point, or as we get closer and closer, for the Senate to nominate or to, excuse me, they approve the nomination of Merrick Garland? Or do you think at a certain point they're going to say, we don't know what Hillary's going to do. We should get this Merrick Garland guy.
No, no, no. They wait until after she's elected. The next day they start the hearing.
Right. I am fairly convinced that Hillary Clinton is going to win, and therefore I am also convinced that Merrick Garland is going to be confirmed in the lame duck session. I also hope that TPP will be enacted in the lame duck session, but that's more the triumph of hope over experience. But I'm very convinced that Garland will be confirmed during the lame duck session.
Okay. And Vegas tends to agree with you, actually. The line right now on the presidency has Hillary Clinton up by 140.
Interesting. So really? DJ threw out some interesting predictions, so let's follow that up or button it up with predictions. And instead of talking about VP picks or anything else, I'm just going to ask everyone, starting with Emily, what will be the biggest event between now and next Sunday's podcast? What will we be talking about next week?
I probably think between now and next week, Trump will do something stupid on Twitter. I don't know what, but something stupid on Twitter.
Well, you went with the odds. Okay, Greg?
Oh, I think and once again I'm going with the odds too. The FBI will clear and will say no indictment, everything's cool. Sorry about that.
What do you think is going to be the highlight of this coming week?
I don't think actually Trump is going to eat his foot this week. I think he's going to try to behave himself as the convention eats up. Sad to say, I think the event that will get everybody's attention this week will be another Al Qaeda or ISIL attack.
Ooh.
Okay. And that's
sorry to be a downer.
No, that occurred to me. That's perfectly legitimate, and I'm going to button it up by saying, although I do think that's unfortunately a very real possibility, just to be different, I'm going to predict that this is the week that Bernie Sanders actually will say the words, "I endorse Hillary Clinton for President of the United States."
No, I don't see that one happening. I would disagree with you. Not until not until the actual convention.
I just want to know what Kevin's drinking.
Clearly it's Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it's free. You're freelining something over there because he's not doing that until the convention.
Okay.
Until there's a gun to his head.
Okay. Well, with that, unless anybody has one last thing that they want to bring up. Let's thank our listeners for tuning in once again. Please don't forget to find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Look for us on Facebook and like us at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Share us on your Facebook feed and tell your friends to listen to us and download us and love us, because we all need more love. And most importantly, please rate and review us on iTunes and give us feedback. Even if you don't like the podcast, if there's something you think we could be doing better, please tell us, because we are so malleable, we will do whatever you ask.
Except for asking me to be sober. That's not happening.
And with that, we thank you and look forward to seeing you again next week.